Good evening, everyone. It's Jeannie Fitzsimmons. I'm the founder of Awakened Heart, and I am a trainer, a master trainer of releasing under Heart Wisdom Seminars. And if you'd like to find out more, you can always go to www.effortlessreleasing.com. Tonight, that is what this call is about. I have been a trainer for a very long time and using releasing and the releasing methods since 1980 now. It has absolutely transformed my life from the inside out. Recently, I had an opportunity to reconnect. For those of you that were on our Valentine's special event last week, recently I had an opportunity to reconnect with a very wonderful teacher and mentor of mine by the name of Virginia Lloyd. Virginia Lloyd was the director of training at Sedona Institute many years ago, and she worked with Lester Levinson, who was the founder of Sedona Institute, and Virginia was the wind beneath the wings of all of our training and education. She taught and she developed and created all of the advanced trainings, and she did that with the inspiration and the faith that she had in Lester Levinson and his guidance. And so we now have all benefited around the world, actually, from the releasing work that we've all done for such a long time. I had the opportunity to reconnect with her after we found out that someone we both know and loved had passed away, and he was really actually the very first Sedona Method instructor that Virginia had taught during the time she was at Sedona Institute. So that's a little bit of the background. Over the years, we've attended hundreds, dozens and dozens of courses and retreats and intensives and seminars with her. So she's been a tremendous guiding light and a pivotal, life-changing person for me for the system that she developed and that we've been following for so long. It's brilliantly simple and simply brilliant, as many transformational leaders will say. So my purpose for creating these teleseminars for you is to reintroduce Virginia Lloyd. Virginia has been living a quiet life for a long time, writing and doing her personal work, and watching her family grow up and being with her children and family and grandchildren. And after our reconnection, we just had a spark that reignited to make the original basic work in its elegant simplicity available. So what we're doing is creating that. So in a moment, as I introduce her, you will find out more. And I wanted to let you know that we had wonderful feedback from the Valentine's call. We had people that actually had breakthroughs from our talk, that had transformational experiences, that had fears of flying and letting go happening when they were in turbulence in the air, and they just had a great release and a wonderful flight. So many things can happen. And tonight we are going to continue to talk about love and relationships and the strategies that may be employed by us that keep us from being happy and free. And we're going to talk about a few things. And it'll always go in the way that it does, because releasing is mercurial. From one minute to the next, we are ever fresh and ever new. So again, Jeannie Fitzsimmons, host of Global Heartrepreneurs, and this is Virginia Lloyd as my guest. And so I'd like to welcome Virginia now to the call. So Virginia, if you are muted, please unmute and please come aboard.
Well, hello, Jeannie. I'm here.
Oh, good. Thank you so much for coming on the call again. And thank you again so much for our sweet Valentine Eve call last week.
Well, I must tell you, I almost didn't make it this evening because I was on the call when you first started, and suddenly the electricity in the whole house went out. And I went for a flashlight, and just as I found it, I had some candles burning, so I wasn't in the complete dark. But I went for a flashlight, and just as I picked it up and turned it on, the lights came back on. But I had to dial myself back into the call. So I'm glad I made it anyway.
Oh, I am too. And you know, it would have been just fine if this would have been a candlelight teleconference call.
Well, the only problem is that the phone is connected to the electricity, so.
That's true.
Anyway, but if I disappear, You'll know what happened. It's kind of bad weather here. It's very windy and cold. And I think it was starting to rain a bit a little while ago. So if I don't answer, you'll know what happened.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I wanted to let everyone know that we've already been getting some Q&As coming in, some questions. We're going to be having a website for people. And for anyone who is listening, we do request that you do not have any recorders going. We do have an instant replay right after the call, and there's going to be plenty of information. We're going to have a Q&A segment from some of the questions that are coming in the next couple of weeks. Would you be willing to do that with me, Virginia?
Oh, yeah. That would be fine.
It would be fun. You know, the most burning question is a phrase that people have been using for a while, you know, and the one burning question for anyone listening, if you would like to, please send it to Jeannie, J-E-A-N-N-I-E, at effortlessreleasing.com. So anyway, at the end, I'll give some other information. So, Virginia, I know that after our call and after our reconnecting, it's been really kind of a whirlwind, hasn't it? You've had calls from friends, and you're reconnecting with people, and we're just having a delightful time talking with each other and talking about the old days.
Yes, you and I have been spending a lot of time together. Very nice.
You know, it's very sweet. One of the things that I'm discovering from the calls that we've made is that what I see, the work that you developed over time and really organically developed, as we dialogued a little bit about last week, the courses were given to create a very, very safe environment, a very peaceful environment for us to really tune into ourselves, into our feelings, into our emotions, because those are the things that have made it so difficult to just have that inner peace and that inner quiet within. And we've had a lot of people talk about the fact that they really love it when things are very simple. They get all, you know, kind of scattered off when things have gotten complex for them. Let's talk a little bit about the simplicity. Will you talk about the intention when you started working with people and the work that we're bringing back out again in the original basic of the four-day course that you started a long time ago? We're resurrecting that for everyone that's listening. Tell us a little bit about the simplicity aspect, will you?
Lester, as you know, was very adamant about keeping it simple, because he said that the mind is complicated enough, and when we try to begin to undo that complexity, if you add more and more and more complexity in it, it makes it much more difficult. So I always tried to keep everything very simple and really come back always to the basic, I don't know what to call it really, the basic method or the basic, just always back to the basics, and really to maintain that simplicity. And I think what it did for people was it made them feel very safe, because there wasn't a lot of different things for them to think about, although there was a lot of information about the mind and how feelings work and so on that was given on the course. But I think people began to feel safe, excuse me, right away, because, first of all, there was such love in the room, and everyone was always so supportive of everyone. And they began to realize that very early on, when people would, you know, I would ask people their name and what they did, and, you know, whatever they wanted to share. They didn't have to say anything they didn't want to say, but it was just asking them why they came to the training and what they wanted to get out of it. And as each one shared a little bit of that information, it really helped open everybody up. And by the time we'd gone around the table and everyone had given their little bit of information, by then it just felt like everyone was ready to just really dig in and start to understand the work and start to use it. And we really started with the releasing very early on. excuse me, very early on in the training. You know, it wasn't like waiting for the next day or whatever. It was, we really started in right away, just giving a little information and then just starting to help people release. It was very powerful.
Yes, I love the way that it's structured. And I know when I brought the courses for you, the method, to Los Angeles many years ago for you and Lester, I remember I used to sit outside the door because I knew by noon on the first day after I'd checked everyone in and everyone was tucked in around the table and they had their space and their tea and they had met the instructor and or met you, I knew by noon or early afternoon people were already beginning to let go, and I knew they were already beginning to get lighter. And it always ignited my heart. It made me feel joyful as I would leave. So I love the structure of what that 4 days really does. And we're talking about kind of bringing that 4 days back in. So can you give a sense of what it is that we're going to cover? We're going to cover on the first weekend, and then the value of having that second weekend to come back to solidify more. Can we talk a little bit about that structure?
Well, the first weekend was really introducing the actual releasing method. And I always gave some information about how the mind worked and how feelings, excuse me, I'm sorry, I don't have time to mute for every little.
That's all right.
My throat seems to be acting up this evening.
That's all right. We're on a living, it's a living course and we're on a living call.
Okay, well, I hope everybody doesn't mind the extraneous noise. But one of the things that we did in the early part was to really take a look at some of the basic reasons for our issues, I guess you might say. And, you know, they really boiled down to some very basic feelings that underlie all the other feelings. And we started with that. And then at one point I would give a demonstration on the board of how the mind worked, the three aspects of mind, which would be the sensing, the recording, and the replaying of the three aspects of mind, and really go into a lot of information about that. And then just really asking people what they wanted to work on or what their feelings were at the moment and working with them. And one of the wonderful things about it was that as one person would release, one of the instructors would take someone through releasing, I always ask that everybody listen and pay attention, because one person might be working on their grief, but somebody else might get very angry at the whole thing. And if they just listen to the questions, because they're quite generic, they're not feeling oriented in the sense of it has, you know, we're talking about grief. We're talking about feelings that anybody might have. And anybody around the table could release while any of the other people were being worked with. So it just became such a beautiful gathering and joining of everybody working on their own issues as each of the other people would be working. And then they were invited that evening to try it in their life, whatever they were going to be doing. And a lot of people really by the lunchtime the first day, they were really using it during the lunch period and getting some experience on their own. And then we asked them to work with things that evening, whatever would be bothering them. And then the next morning was always what happened. And I gave everybody a notebook so they could write down their questions and their gains. You know, they could make notes because, you know, when you get into a feeling and you get overcome or overwhelmed by a feeling, you feel as though you're never going to get out of it. And if you have written down some of your progress, some specific gains, like I let go of my fear of flying and I feel wonderful, or, you know, just whatever it might be, then that becomes a resource for yourself to refer to when you feel like you're never going to get out of something, or when you feel that you just can't deal with whatever's going on. And it really encourages you to go back and start releasing again.
And I agree. I've enjoyed that. Over the years, I've had, of course, many Gaines books and loads and loads of boxes of books that I've written in, because when you write something down and it's out of you, out of your mind, out of the spinning in your head as if it's real, and you see yourself as separate from that thought or separate from that emotion or from that reaction, and you can let it go and clear from the inside out and write that gain. I have had many, many times, as I know friends of ours and other fellow releasers have had, when you write the gains down, then you have a chance to look back at them. If your mind ever tells you that you're having a hard time, or you're angry, or you, the releasing doesn't work, or you can't let go, as soon as I would open my gains book, and it would be like having chocolate kisses. Every time I would read my gains, I would go, oh, I remember that. Oh, yes, I let that go. Oh, that was easy. Oh, I never thought I could let that go. And suddenly, my mind, it's almost as if the mind bows to my heart, because the mind knows it cannot hold a candle to this heart wisdom that knows it can let go.
Yes. Well, the other thing that, you know, whether it would, the first weekend and then the second weekend, of course, the 5 days in between always felt very important to me, because basically people had a chance to use it in their day-to-day living and to, you know, write down any questions that came up. And then we worked on goals, and we gave worksheets, and not just gave out worksheets, but actually worked with people on the worksheets as we went along. So everybody felt that they had a real solid basis for continuing. And then we would have workshops afterwards in the evenings, once a week, or, you know, twice a month, or whatever it might turn out to be. So that's basically the general information about the training.
That's wonderful. It really ends up being a 9-day course, doesn't it? That was my experience of it. Yeah, it's lovely.
Yeah, it does.
You know, I had someone write me an email this week that had an amazing gain. You know, when I introduced before you got your lights turned back on and came back into the call, a friend of mine and a student actually that's gone to quite a few of the trainings and advanced retreats that I've had said, wow, that Valentine's Day call last week was amazing, because I realized that when I got into the plane, which I really don't like flying, I just asked myself, wow, how would I feel if I could just love this airplane, if I could just love flying, if I could just love this turbulence a little bit. And what she discovered, and I want to share this with you because it's one of the topics that I wanted to ask you about, and the topic is fear. And fear, one thing she discovered, and we can talk a little bit about this, is that she discovered she wasn't afraid of flying or the turbulence. She was really recognizing she was afraid of the fear feeling. And I thought that was a wonderful insight for her to have, because as she saw it and then continued to release, she just burst into laughter, seeing that she had always perceived herself as a fearful person. And I wanted to ask you a little about that. Isn't that a sweet gain?
It is wonderful. I think, you know, her insight into being afraid of fear takes me back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt during the Second World War, when he said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And I think sometimes, because of people's not wanting to experience the feelings, whether they be fear, grief, or whatever, then they tend to want to suppress them and walk away from them and escape, or, you know, I don't know. There are all different ways that people handle their emotions or try to, when they don't know or don't realize that they can let them go, because I think the knowing is there all the time. And I think everybody at some point in their life, has, I think everyone has at some point let go. And one of the things that I would ask people in the first day of the training, I would ask them if they could think of a time when they had let go and what happened. And one of the women I remember vividly, she put her hand up and said that what had happened to her was she had been skiing and she had fallen, and somehow, I don't understand exactly how it happened, but she sort of got to a place where she was supposed to turn and she didn't, and she fell off this embankment, and she said she fell about 20 feet, and her first thought was, oh my God, I'm going to be killed, and then she said, oh well, and she said, my whole body relaxed, and I fell and landed in the snow, and I didn't have a bruise, I didn't have an ache or a pain anywhere. And she equated that to her letting go, which was just, in her phrase, oh, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about it. And she said, my whole body relaxed. And I said, yes, that is definitely an experience of letting go. But what happens, I think, with people is that they do have experiences like that, but then they try to use the same mental process of saying, oh, well, and expecting it to change. And it doesn't, because the first time it was done instinctively, and it was just an automatic letting go, which we often do when we're in danger. The second time, when you try to, you remember the words you used, and you try to use those words again, they don't work, because then it's mental. It's a memory of something that happened, but later on, it's in your mind. It's just a mental verbiage that doesn't attach itself to the feelings. And I think what we do with the training is direct people to the feeling, which everybody wants to avoid, by the way. But we direct people to their feeling of the moment, and we work with that. And then it becomes experiential. It's not in their head anymore. And if it is in their head, I just redirect them to their feelings. And that always seemed to help get in touch with what was really going on, not just their thoughts about it in their head, but to actually get in touch with the visceral feeling. And once you get in touch with that visceral feeling, you find that you can actually let go much more easily. And sometimes, just by getting in touch with the feeling, it disappears.
This is beautiful.
Yeah, I mean, it's not difficult. It's just that we're so programmed to go other ways with our feelings. We want to get away from them as best we can. And if we can't if we can't just forget about them and deny them and suppress them, then we try to run away, and that usually doesn't work. I remember once I went to a movie, and I had just started releasing, but I wasn't very good at it at the time, I guess. But anyway, I was in such grief about something. I can't even remember what. It was so many years ago. But I was in this terrible, terrible grief, and I thought, I have to go to a movie. And I went to this movie that was, you know, I had heard was so funny. And I sat there, and I practically cried through the whole thing. It was the worst movie I ever saw in my life, and I just did not get any relief at all. I even got mad because I had wasted my time and my money on this stupid movie that wasn't funny. And anyway, I went away from the movie just as bad as I went in. But maybe 3 or 4 days later, a friend said, oh, let's go see this movie. I really want to see it. I said, I don't know. But she insisted, and finally said, okay, but it's not funny. Well, I went in, and I was feeling pretty good. And I tell you, I laughed through the whole thing. So it really shows you that, you know, whatever's going on in you overrides a lot of other stuff. And sometimes you try to get away from it, and it just doesn't work because you can't override it sometimes. And then you might want to punch somebody or express in some other way. And that doesn't help either if you've ever done it. So, you know.
Oh, this is great. Well, my name is Jeannie Fitzsimmons, and we are speaking with, for those of you that may have just joined our call, we are speaking with Virginia Lloyd. And Virginia Lloyd was the former director of Sedona Institute, and she was the one that organically helped develop and create this entire releasing process that we've been talking about. And Heart Wisdom Seminars offers those trainings to you. And I just want to thank you for being on the call. We will have an instant replay of this call following it. So please do remember, no recording during the call. Please turn off any recording devices. And Virginia, she was talking about emotions and feelings for those that have just joined. And she has designed and devised a way to help us. And I know I've used this for many, many years with my students, Virginia. And last week, I had the opportunity to be a speaker at an event, and I shared the energetics of the emotional reactivity kind of tricks that we play on ourselves. I call them strategies, the emotional strategies. Talk a little bit about the emotions. When you said the visceral feelings, that's the key. And there is an energetic scale of emotions that you created on the chart of emotions when you developed that years ago. And how is it that that really helps people? I know how it helps people in my trainings, but what would you say about that chart? How do you see that as such a pivotal key? Because I do.
Well, it describes, you know, it describes emotions as energy. If you look at the word emotion, it's energy in motion, in a way. And each feeling group has a very definite energetic stamp, if you will. Apathy is the lowest, I mean, above suicide, which is getting away, really getting away. But apathy is an emotion that it has very little energy to it. Because what happens is, as we accumulate traumas or disappointments or whatever in our lives, what happens is we suppress them and try to move on. And the more we do that, the more energy is required to keep it all under wraps, so to speak, to keep it all suppressed. And so when you're in apathy, what it means to me is that you have so much in subconsciously suppressed that most of your energy is going to keep it down and out of sight. And you have very little energy left to take action or to feel good or to feel energetic, because most of your energy is holding down all those feelings. And then as you start, you know, people in a grief mode, the energy starts to move there. There's a little bit of energy to move. And what happens is, because it's been held back, when we do start to move some of that energy, it's very painful. And that's the grief energy. And you might have heard at funerals or people that have had a terrible disappointment or a loss of some kind. And I've heard, you know, when I was younger and was at a funeral, the widow didn't cry, and everybody was saying, oh, if she would only cry, she'd feel so much better, because it would indicate that that energy was starting to move a little bit, whereas the other way, you're just numb. In apathy, you're just numb with grief or with, you know, with loss. And as you move up, the next one after grief would be fear. And fear, to me, is you're starting to get enough energy to run away or to fight, you know, the fight or flight thing. But it's because something externally triggers the fear. It triggers that there's danger. And that moves you. Even sometimes if you're in grief, if you get afraid of something, you'll start to take some kind of action. And so the fear feeling, to me, has more energy than the grief or the apathy, because, you know, you will run away or you'll fight, I guess. And after that, The next energy is the first one to me. It's called lust. I call it lust because it's desire, it's wanting, and it's an energy. It's the first one where you'll start to reach out, to where you want to reach out, but there's still so much of the fear that you don't do it. So lust has that quality of I want it, I can't have it. I want it, I'm afraid to try for it. That kind of energy, which keeps us stuck there. And that's the lust energy. And we try to satisfy it. Oh, I don't know. How about chocolate? I love chocolate. I'm sorry to say. I love chocolate. Never mind. Enough about chocolate. Anyway, the lust is that kind of energy, you know. And I had a friend once. It's such a funny story. He collected silver boxes. Every time they would go to Europe, he haunted all the antique shops for silver boxes. Anytime they went down, you know, to a new city, silver boxes. They had so many silver boxes, and he would, you know, sometimes just to show off his silver boxes. Of course, they were all over the place in his house, but he would put some on a tray, and he would ask us, well, which one do you think is the prettiest? These are my new ones, and, you know, he was so tickled with them. And one day, my mother and I went to visit, and he came with four silver boxes on a tray, and he asked my mother which one she liked the best. So she looked, and she pointed to one. She said, oh, I think that one's beautiful, Paul. Well, anyway, he picked it up and handed it to her. He said, Catherine, I want you to have it. My mother said, oh, no. Oh, no. I would never take it, Paul, because I know how much you love your silver boxes. He said, well, let me tell you something about my silver boxes. He said, I was dusting the other day. And I dusted downstairs, and then I was upstairs in the bedroom, and I'm dusting. And I was dusting it. Silver box, and I looked at it, and finally I looked around, and I suddenly realized I have silver boxes. I don't need anymore. To me, that was a big release of lust, of that can't have it. So, you know, sometimes we get into that mode, and it's an obsession or, you know, something like that that takes over. But that, to me, is the lust energy, where we just keep trying to grab and grab and grab for things because we feel we want them, but we feel we can't or shouldn't have them. Well, after lust, then comes the biggie called anger, and I think everybody knows what that is. I mean, there's a lot of energy there, but it's very out of control sometimes, and it's very destructive, and that's where you'll punch a wall and break your hand, or you'll punch a person and get put in jail, or, you know, all those kind of things. Or sometimes you'll just fume and take it out on yourself, because if it doesn't have an outlet or you can't let it go, then it begins to turn in on yourself. And after that comes pride, which to me is not pride of country or pride of, you know, pride of an accomplishment. That, to me, doesn't fit in the pride that I'm talking about. And the pride I talk about is an energy that is down-putting. You think you're better than other people. You think you have a better car, or you have a better house, or, you know, it's like you're better than others, and they don't exist really except as somebody out there for you to talk to, or somebody, you know, to admire your car or whatever. That's the kind of pride I'm talking about. And it also is a very stuck place because you're not open to new ideas. Most of the time, one form of pride is you just think you know everything and who's going to teach you. And if you're not open, then you're really stuck. And there is a pride there. And then there's spiritual pride, which is so, so destructive to your growth because, you know, we've gone to this ashram or that guru, and now we know it, you know, now we're on the path and all that, and there's a pride in it, and it doesn't leave us open to learning more and to experience other people who present the truth in a different way, maybe. But that's the kind of pride I'm talking about. And that seems to be, after that, there's a dividing line, and there are three states at above that, and the first one is courageousness, and that's the feeling where I can and so can you. And that's what happened when Kathleen told me what she had discovered of a way to free herself, and she shared it with me. And when she shared it, I said, "Oh my gosh, I can do that." And she looked at me and smiled, and she said, "Anybody can do that. Everybody can do that." Which is that's the courageousness. It's the sharing. It's the openness. It's the givingness. It's just the most energetic. There's so much energy there to do and to accomplish, and it's just such a beautiful. I love courageousness. And then,
you know, one thing I wanted to insert here with you, Virginia, is I was reading a quote this morning as I was preparing and doing some things for the website, and I realized that in my bedroom on my wall, I have a beautiful quote from Ramana Maharshi, and he talks about what enlightenment is. And the quote is this: "Enlightenment is courageousness in all situations at all times."
Oh, that's beautiful.
End quote. Isn't that lovely?
That is beautiful. I love it.
Because enlightenment is so talked about. You mentioned about the spiritual pride. Enlightenment is always so sought, and waking up, and who's enlightened and who isn't, and have they gone free, and, well, how can they feel that way if they're free? And, you know, freedom is a moment-to-moment experience directly within ourselves. In my experiences, if I look back toward myself and I'm loving from within and I'm loving out, and I'm at peace within myself, that's me sitting in the quality of freedom and love. And when courageousness is engaged and you are in that element and energy of courageousness, of I can, like you're describing, it's so exciting, because anything that comes at you, well, I can do that. Well, I can handle that. Well, we can do that together. There's a lightness of spirit. And as far as I'm concerned, I love when he talks about that being enlightenment. Because can you imagine a world if people were simply in, well, I can, and you can?
Yes, beautiful. And the other thing, you know, when you said who's free, who isn't free, if they're free, how could they behave that way, or if they're free, why would they feel that way? People forget that freedom is free.
It includes everything.
It includes everything. And the other thing that I think is important, as you were talking, what came to me had to do with choice, and that's freedom. To be able to choose the appropriate action, to choose how we feel. And oftentimes, you know, we don't have the choice because we don't know how to let go, or we don't know how to turn things around. But sometimes I've suggested to people that instead of saying, I have to go to the store, I have to cook dinner, that they say, I choose to do it. I choose to go to the store, or it's time to go to the store, and I plan to get some things, you know, that kind of thing. So you take it, instead of it being a have to, or I should, or I must, that it becomes a choice. And if you start looking at things that way, I think it can really help a lot, because we're so inundated with all the stuff we have to do. I mean, we get caught up in it. We all do. And I have to remind myself very often, wait a minute, do I have to, or do I choose to? And sometimes I say, no, I choose not to, and that's a freedom too. So that's in courageousness, I think. And a lot of times people think that it isn't courageousness if you don't have some fear attached to it, and that isn't so. You see, courageousness is really I can, and if you're afraid but you do it anyway, that's I can. And if you're in lust and you choose to walk away from something that would be a destructive thing, and you say, yeah, that's choice, and that's I can. In other words, I can do without this. I don't have to hurt that person. I don't have to do this thing that would be destructive to me. So, you know, there are all kinds of ways you can look at it. And even grief. People, you know, I've seen such courageousness in people that are so in such pain physically or especially emotionally, where they wake up and they just think they can't get out of bed, but they do. They get out of bed, they get the children ready for school, they go to work, they come home, they take care of the family, and then they plop in bed and they can't move. And the next morning, it's the same thing. You know what? That's courageousness. No matter how you slice it, people that are in apathy sometimes, you just see them, they can barely move, but they go to work. Or they can barely move, but they'll go get themselves a cup of tea. And that's courageousness, because there are people that don't. There are people that will just stay in bed and not move. So, you know, it's all in degrees of energy. And when we look at this chart of emotions, it's energy available in a scale. And then after courageousness, there's the most gorgeous, gorgeous state, which is acceptance. And that truly is love. And it's such a quiet, beautiful space. And it's a joyous space. So it has that quality of just inner joy, that's the cup runneth over. That's that feeling. And that is just a step away from any of the other emotions. If you can let them go, you just have to be amazed sometimes at how joyous you can feel. Now, Matt, even, the circumstances haven't changed a bit, but all of a sudden, you're not sad anymore, you're happy. And that's acceptance. And that's such a loving space. And then just the one above that is just this total quietness, just that stillness where all energy is available, but at rest. See, in apathy, there's no energy available. In peace, there's all energy available, but it's at rest. Immediately available should the occasion arise, but it's an inner state of peacefulness, of being, and of just pure being. And it's so beautiful that when we touch into that, and, you know, we all touch into it from time to time because it's our very nature. And so I don't care who it is, at some point, and it might have come from, you know, your first love. It might have come from just looking out at a beautiful sunset. But I think everybody that is on this planet, I believe, has experienced it at some time or another, for whatever reason, because that peace is our true nature. That's our beingness. And it's just so profoundly beautiful.
Thank you so much. It's so beautiful. Yeah. This is Jeannie Fitzsimmons, and you are listening to Global Heartrepreneurs and an intimate conversation with Virginia Lloyd, talking about love and energy and emotions and releasing and being joyful. And I want to thank you for listening, because in the last segment, we're going to talk a little bit more about different ways that we might be able to utilize and benefit from the wisdom that you gain from learning how to release. And Virginia and I are going to be doing some projects together, and I will be continuing the work that she developed so long ago in the 4-day basic training, and that is launching now in the L.A., San Diego, Sedona, and the San Francisco area. So you'll be in tune. Come to the website as you would like. HeartWisdomSeminars.com is coming up soon, and you can always listen to this afterwards on the instant replay of this call on www.effortlessreleasing.com. So, Virginia, I want to mention the feel I have and the experience I've always had as a teacher now and having the joy in working with you, licensed by you to take your work out and continue. The approach that I've always had, that I've known you've always had in every course and every door I've ever walked in, it's love. This work is about love, and it's about returning to that heart within us by letting go. And we're letting go of anything that would cover that love, that would hold us back from that love. And these emotional strategies, these emotional ways that we've been programmed to respond to things, we're like a hollow flute that's always playing our energy depending on what's happening in the world. And I just want to acknowledge that the joy I've always had, this is not an intellectual experience. This is not a spinning in the head work. This is truly heart-centered work. And that's the thing I feel makes such profound transformation in people's lives. We can get some releasing done from our head, but I agree and appreciate what you said earlier. This is not a rote, repeating thing where if it happened once, oh, if I repeat it in that exact same way, I should get the same result. That's not really what this is about. And I love the fact that we're going to be able to launch again the trainings, because you mentioned early on about having people sit around a table.
Yes.
And we're going back to that beautiful boutique, intimate quality of the course where it's really one-on-one and personalized with small groups. I love that. And it's about the love.
Yes, it is. And I had, when I was teaching in New York in the early days, back in the 70s, I had a plant in the middle of the table. It wasn't a, you know, tall plant. It was actually, it was a crown of thorns. And it would get these beautiful flowers on it from time to time. But what would happen, that was the healthiest plant that I ever saw in my life, because everybody was letting go of all this stuff as they sat around the table, and this plant was just beaming, you know, it was being beamed love at it all the time, and it was such a beautiful, healthy plant. It was just amazing. It was the, you know, the recipient of all that love that kept growing and growing as people let go. And,
you know,
people talk to me, they would come back the second weekend and talk about how their lives had changed in terms of relationships and all kinds of things. One man was ready to quit his job the first weekend, and I helped him release about his boss, who they said they just did not get along. He came back the second weekend and said that one night, like toward the end of the week, the boss came over and said, "Hey, are you going to be watching the game tonight?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "My television's broke. Can I come and watch it at your house?" And he said that he and his boss became best friends. He said, "I'm not leaving that job. It's a good one."
Oh, that's great. You know, I had someone, I've had quite a few games come in this last couple of months, and one of the people said, "I love the natural and simple method, the way that you teach it over the two weekends. I can use it right in the middle of my meetings at work, and I can become more clear thinking. And now my children run out of the front door to greet me when I drive my car into the driveway. That's never happened before."
That's great.
I love
that. It just reminded me, I had a man in New York who was a CEO of a big company, and he owned hotels and, I mean, all this stuff. And yet his children were teenagers, and they wouldn't speak to him. He was divorced, and I don't know what his, you know, whether his wife had said things or what, but his children wouldn't speak to him, and they were at camp. Well, he started releasing about the children, and he just kept releasing. And, you know, we would talk every so often after the training, and one day he came with a big grin. He said, "Guess what? My kids are at summer camp, and they called me and invited me to come up for Parents' Day." He couldn't believe it. And it was all just him releasing. It wasn't anything that he did physically. You know, he would call them anyway. He did that anyway, but they'd usually hang up. But they stopped hanging up on him after. You know, as you release, you just get into more love. You're uncovering the love that you are, and it really makes a difference in all your relationships.
One of my students had a lot more love happen to him on the road. He said, "I thought I would never get over my road craziness, but I find now that when I drive, I'm not as bothered and upset by the way that I used to be, and I never thought I would say that." He said, "Obviously something opened in me."
Yes.
He was so surprised.
I know. I've had a few people tell me that. That's great.
Well, you know, the thing
I love.
It's...
Go ahead.
The thing that I love is that it helps people take that inner pressure off of themselves. I mean, I know that did that for me 30 years ago, and to give people the gift back to themselves of letting themselves off the hook, of letting themselves, that is such a huge gift, I think, from this work. And it's not about making ourselves do something or thinking ourselves into something. It's about letting go of that underlying motivators. I call them the motivators underlying the stress within us. So it's such a powerful stress elimination ability that you put in this simple step-by-step process in this system. And I think sometimes people think it's too simple. And so over the years, I've watched it get a little more complicated, and we're going back to the simplicity now.
Well, you know, Lester used to say, keep it simple, because, you know, he felt that the mind was complicated enough, as I think I said earlier,
mm-hmm.
that we're complicated enough as it is without more complication, so the simpler. And I had a physicist once. This was on one of the big oil companies that I was giving some trainings, and this one man, the first day, I worked with everybody at the table, but this one man, every time I asked him if he had something he wanted to work on, he said, no, I'm fine. And the end of the day, I asked if there were any comments or any questions before we finished for the day, and he put up his hand and spoke and said that, he said, you know, I'm a physicist, and I know this work is true because as a physicist, we know that the closer you get to truth, the simpler everything becomes. And this is the simplest thing that I've ever come across. It's wonderful. So I felt wonderful about it, too. I thought, wow, that was quite a statement.
You know, I've had parents come up after the course, and they say, you know, raising teenage kids, I was just my stomach and my solar plexus was always in a ball of knots and tension. You know, I just finally was able to release the tension, and I'm so enjoying my life with my children so much more. And they would say, you know, I used to be a worry ward after them, and now that I can release, now I'm a better parent. My gut doesn't churn. I don't worry about them so much. I release, but then I take the actions to really rein them in when I need to be. And I think that's so important for parents to know, or when new babies come into the home and it changes the whole dynamic of the home, to have a mother and a father be able to release their feelings about all the amazing transformational changes that happen in their life with that. I mean, this is just one of those amazing ways that you can apply it in the ways that are pertinent for you.
Yes, and before we go, I see we're getting close to the end of the hour, but before we go, I did want to just suggest to people that if you are thinking of taking the training, wonderful, but if you're not, or if you can't take it right away or whatever, I really just want to leave you with a thought that you might be able to use to help yourself in the meantime, and that is whenever you have a feeling, instead of running away from it, just ask yourself, what am I feeling? And then once you identify it, you know, I'm angry or I'm sad or whatever it might be, just ask yourself very gently, it has to be very gently, just ask yourself, could I let this feeling go? Or could I let go of this feeling? And you might be surprised at how much more wonderful that you feel after you just that simple query. But you need to be in touch with your feeling. Otherwise, if you're just in your head saying, oh, I'm angry, could I let go of my anger? No, that's not going to work. It's really a very gentle, inner-directed process. And that, I think, will help you, you know, whether you ever take the training or not. So
it's beautiful. You know, one of the things that we touched on last week that I had someone ask about, oh, I thought you were going to get back and talk about this Harvard test or this survey or study that happened, and I didn't get back to it. I apologize for that. Virginia, can you talk a little bit about what happened there, the testing that was done back during the time when you were involved? And There was a Harvard study.
Yes, one of our graduates sponsored it, and it was a study that Harvard, one of the, I can't remember their names, of course, but I have them somewhere. But what happened was they gave us a class I forget how many people, maybe 12 or 15 or 20, and I gave them the training, and at the same time, there was another group of a similar makeup, you know, men, women, and experience, and I don't know what all the criteria were, but it was a similar group to the group that were receiving our training, and they were taught progressive relaxation, which is, I think most people know what it is, but it's where you start with your toes, and can I relax my toes, and can I relax the sole of my foot, and am I going to relax my ankle, and, you know, you kind of do that kind of work of relaxation. And then they had a third group, again, evenly matched, and that was a control group who were taught nothing. And they gave them a stress test of watching horrible movies, you know, accident scenes and people getting beat up, and I don't know what all, I didn't see them, but the people were shown that at the beginning or before the trainings, and then they were given it right after the training, and then they were given the same similar movies like a few months after the trainings were all finished. And our group was so, the difference between our group and progressive relaxation, and of course the control group was, there was almost no change, but progressive relaxation had some changes, and they used different criteria. Like one of them was relaxation. Well, in the relaxation thing, our group lost out by like 2 points or something, and it was pointed out that we weren't teaching people relaxation, but they still had almost the same results. But in every other area, our group outshone both of the other groups. And that was such a drastic outcome that the man that was doing the study said he refused to publish it because he didn't believe it, even though he was the one that had done it. And he said he would have to do a few more studies of this before he would be willing to do that. Well, you know, our graduate wasn't about to keep shelling out money for more and more studies. So it was unpublished, but we do have the results. I did get the results, and it was quite amazing.
Well, you know what's amazing is the fact that I know people can hear this when they're on this call. They can understand why I've been such joy at reintroducing you back into both my world and the course that you originally developed back out into the public again, because there is really room for, first of all, for women to be teaching this and for people to really listen to someone else that was really the dynamic force and the architect of what allowed this stellar, simple system to really be put in the way that it is out there to give people such freedom and such liberation. So I'm just delighted and thrilled, and I want to let people know that we're going to be having these conversations. That as long as you're willing to do that, we'll be having teleseminars and conferences and some Q&As, and we'll be writing some things together and having some surprises in the future. But I am starting, again, for those who may have just joined the call, my name is Jeannie Fitzsimmons of Awakened Heart and Heart Wisdom Seminars, and this is Virginia Lloyd, and Virginia Lloyd and I are collaborating on some wonderful new ventures. But I want to welcome anyone who would like to come to free introductories. There is going to be a schedule that's going to be put up this week. And I do have something coming in L.A. and San Diego very, very soon. So I just want to say, Virginia, it is a thrill and a delight to have reconnected with you and to have the opportunity to tap into and support everyone from the heart of your wisdom and from part of the wisdom that everyone really has.